The less your business spends, the more margin you keep. But today, everything costs more. So smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one proven platform, helping you reduce IT costs, maintenance costs, and manual errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move to NetSuite. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/stereo. netsuite.com/stereo.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high-rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
This crowd rises to its feet. Vaccaro slammed it home. Garland left wing, three ball. Perfect! Garland went in the lane, locked him only. Pow! And Allen blocked the shot at the rim. Pow! In the left hand and a foul!
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast, part of the Cavs Media family. I'm your host, Justin Rowan. The Chase Down is presented by Fubo, the official streaming partner of the Cavs. Watch over 350 channels of live sports and TV, including Bally Sports Ohio, without cable. There's no cost and no commitment. Try for free at FuboTV.com/Cavs. Since we last recorded, the Cavs won a game they shouldn't have won against the Dallas Mavericks and lost a game that they shouldn't have lost against the Chicago Bulls. Know what that means? Today we're going to be sifting through some bull for some nuggets to find out what takeaways we have from these two games. Joining me today is my co-host, Carter Rodriguez. Carter, how you doing, buddy?
Can I just say, I thought that was perhaps the best intro you've ever done.
Oh,
thank you. That was very sharp. That felt like radio ready, bro.
That was well off the dome. That was off the dome. Other than sifting through some bull, I think I'm going to title this episode that. So I was planning ahead a little bit there, but the rest was all improv, buddy.
Yeah, I know everyone loves shop talk to start a podcast, but I just enjoyed it, brother.
You know what? I think we can indulge ourselves every now and then. Most basketball podcasts take about 15 minutes before they get into their topics. We will not go that long today. Little bit of news at the top of this episode. Donovan Mitchell is questionable for Friday's game against the Detroit Pistons with a knee soreness. Just guessing based on how the Cavs have handled these type of injuries throughout the season, I think they're going to be cautious. So wouldn't be surprised if he missed that one. Fingers crossed that he can play on Sunday. And also Sunday, the Cavs announced today that that's going to be Bowtie night at Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse. Obviously, you know, in honor of Nick Gilbert, there will be what's not to like towels, rally towels given away at the game, and they will be unveiling a banner for him in the rafters. I'm wearing my little bow tie magnet today in honor. So if you're able to make it down there to the field house, I certainly would encourage you to do so. But Carter, We've got some games to discuss here. You know what? I kind of like that we aren't going live post-game as much as people like to flock to the podcast after we do go live post-game. Sometimes I just like to be able to sit there and collect my thoughts, do my rewatch of the games. I think depending on which one we would have picked for a post-game, it would have been completely different tone. So I'm interested to see what the tone of this one's going to be, because the Max Strus game winner was one of the most fun shots I can remember in the last couple of years. That five for five run that he had at the end of that game. I thought the Cavs did a terrific job throughout that game, hanging around with Dallas. They kind of let go of the rope at one moment, and Max was there to bail them out as Kyrie and Luka basically did a imitation of the Kyrie and LeBron game five with 70 plus points. So to survive that outing from those two, I thought was significant. And then obviously the Chicago game was a whole lot less fun.
Yeah, well, you know what's weird is I actually probably had, on balance, more fun watching the Chicago game. It was, you know, like there was some dead legs, you know, I think 5-7 road back to back. That'll get you. Mm-hmm. That'll get the best of us. And it certainly seemed to get the Cavs with some comically bad rebounding numbers. you know, cartoonishly bad rebounding numbers. The Bulls had you know, a cool 25 offensive rebounds, which is, and you know, on one end, like, and by the way, I'm to be clear, like, I don't know. I guess what I'll say is this, because, you know, people were pretty grumpy in the Discord last night, and on some nights, a bad stupid loss like that is like really frustrating. I was just kind of like, I don't know. I was just in a headspace where I was like, well, I guess this is going to be ridiculous. And it remained ridiculous from pretty much start to finish. Yep. You know, the Cavs did a lot of really cool process things. We saw a lot of stuff that I've been interested in seeing. It's a bummer that it ended in a loss, because I don't know if that, you know, I don't know what that means. But, like, we'll start with the Strus thing. Okay. Because it's important that we hit that, I think. One, really happy for him. After, you know, he's just had a weird, you know, I talked about his shooting volume numbers on the last podcast and how I was a little disappointed kind of where they were at. Obviously, the accuracy hasn't been there, but he had kind of stopped taking them. So a 5-for-5 fourth quarter feels like just what the doctor ordered. Mm-hmm. And Justin, can I just say, I knew that shot was going in the second it left his hands. It looked so good coming off his hands. I was like, that's going in. I don't know why. I just knew it in my gut that was what was going to happen. So it was really, really fun when it did. Obviously, a marquee moment. And I want to shout out more than his play, which, of course, we can dive into. One of my favorite post-game interviews I've ever seen. Mm. That man had so much adrenaline coursing through his veins. He was shaking.
He forgot not to smile so many times post games. And Max is probably already up there among my favorite Cavs role players ever. Like, I just love his grumpy disposition, and he very much reminds me of how I was when I was on a basketball court. And, you know, yes, the shooting can be streaky. I think obviously he's gone through some things with sore knee and whatnot, and not playing with a point guard for a lot of this season. But you know, we've come to love streak shooters in the past. Like, J.R. Smith was very much that, and I feel like Max comes with a more complete game than J.R. in the other area, so I can live with the shooting coming and going. I obviously want to see it kind of normalize and get, you know, up to that, like, 37% that he's been for his career, but I've been so thrilled with Max, and I agree with you. Like, seeing the reaction post-game, you know, that was a nice cathartic win, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. So that was really cool. You know, and I thought that game was good, but not crazy. You know, it was like, you know, Max did kind of save it. And, you know, on a night where Luka and Kyrie were that nuts, it felt great to get a win. Yep. You know, I don't think that the Cavs were giving up easy looks to those guys. I think they were just being the unbelievably talented scorers they are. And those are normally wins for a Dallas team that is much, much, much improved from what they were at the beginning of the year. So
yeah, like, I think they were on a 7-1 stretch going into that game.
Yeah, they're 33-25, but I think they're a better team than that from a talent perspective, especially with their roster construction they have now. So going into the Bulls game, like, it's funny, I liked the process. It was a night where Donovan just did not have it. Mm-hmm. He looked like he was running at 70% speed. So I'm not surprised to see here he's banged up.
You know, I thought it was honestly the illness, you know, like, because there's been lingering illness. I bet if I had to guess, 40% of our listeners have been going through this too, because I've been going through it for the last 2 weeks, and everybody I talk to seems to, you know, have something that, you know, we're sick for a couple of days, but you're still kind of hacking and feeling groggy later on. Like, that was clearly going around, right? I think Sam Merrill had it at one point. Dean Wade had it. I thought Dean looked the best he's looked since he got sick against Chicago. I really liked his minutes. But I figured for Donnie, you know, he came back first game wasn't particularly strong by his standards against Washington. Was very good against Dallas. It made sense.
A lot third of threes, game, though. A lot of threes against Dallas.
Yes. So it kind of made sense, you know, third game in four nights. I was like, oh, maybe, you know, like he just isn't bouncing back. His body isn't recovering like it normally would because it's still kind of getting over whatever he's been dealing with. But I don't know if the knee issue came up in that Chicago game, but they're definitely, you felt the lack of rim pressure from him and really from the Cavs overall.
Just like burst. You know, he didn't have any burst tonight, you know, last night. He had matchups he normally would cook, and he was having to work a lot harder to get a clean look off on him. So, you know, he had a rough game, and it's so jarring when Jared Allen has bad games because he is so the model of consistency. But it was probably his worst game of the year.
Yeah. I'm comfortable saying that.
You know, I said in our Discord last night in our game threads that I'll bet. Like, how many games do you think Jared Allen's had where he has more free field goal attempts than points? Like, I'll bet it's less than 10.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's just not a thing that happens. He had 11 points on 12 attempts. He only had 4 rebounds in 34 minutes. He bit on pump fakes. He fouled DeRozan in the crucial in. You know, what you could call like a game losing play. You know,
did you hear the response he gave to Fedor regarding that?
No.
Chris asked him if it was an intentional foul because they were up three or whatnot, like what he was thinking. And he just went, no, I just effed up. And for a guy that never swears, like that's the response. And, you know, Donnie, obviously, you know, whatever he was dealing with in this game, he and Allen having rough games against Chicago, I give them a pass in that one because I think both of them have earned the benefit of the doubt the way that they carry the team through that stretch without Garland and Mobley. I just think that they have been so good. But rather than focus on the Dallas win, I do want to focus on this Chicago loss, and particularly the rebounding. I don't blame anybody from feeling angsty or going, aha, after this one, because this is a loss that absolutely is going to trigger some like PTSD among fans, right? Like the being out rebounded at that rate, those rebounds largely coming off of horrific misses with like random bad like bounces and stuff like that. That is very Knicks series. I understand why that would be like very concerning and traumatizing with what we've gone through. And I think at times, Carter, what we're dealing with this season and something that you and I are dealing with, something that a lot of fans are dealing with, is we're still getting comfortable with what this Cavs team is. And the idea of a Cavs roster that isn't in a rebuild or an instant contender, because that has been our experience throughout our adult lives. We are dealing with a team that has flaws, that's on the way up, and there's going to be these uneven stretches. And I thought, you know, yes, third game in four nights, same situation for both teams. They're both tired. I know Chicago didn't have to travel, but for the most part, it's a pretty level playing field. The Cavs got outworked in this game collectively, and I think they deserve some criticism for that. Like, I think it's fair to be concerned about that. I don't think you have to go necessarily to macro conclusions, but really what it came down to was that they were outworked in this particular game.
I mean, they got outworked and they had bad bounces, and Chicago kind of played a weird lineup, you know, this double big thing where they can just double big stronger than our double big.
Did you see the Drummond stat?
No.
So as a starter this season, he's averaging the most
game or something like that. Yeah, ridiculous.
He's averaging the most rebounds a player has ever averaged since Dennis Rodman. And like, if you're playing Andre Drummond, who is one of the best rebounders in NBA history, if you're playing him at power forward, that is like, that's unusual. That is two true centers. And to some extent, it's a little bit like bringing a gun to a fight where you cause the other team to, or the person you're going up against to kind of escalate what they're going to, because they don't go to Drummond at power forward in every matchup. But because the Cavs had two bigs out on the court, I think that was one of the kind of leading motivations. They did that in the last game against the Cavs as well. So, you know, it's kind of like mutually assured destruction of, hey, if you're going to double bigs, we're throwing our two centers out there and we don't care if they're mucking it up. We don't care if it's ugly. We're going to generate so many second chance opportunities that we're going to battle through it. And that's a lot of what Chicago has done recently.
Well, if you remember when the Cavs were bad, when they had Andre Drummond, they, you know, sometimes you just kind of got to play the possession game when you've got a talent disadvantage.
Yep.
And the Cavs stayed in and won games just by being bullies, by playing, you know, Drummond and McGee next to each other for a possession here and there, and just being big and strong and long. And like that's sometimes like it's never going to work over like an 82 game season. But like on the right night, and you know, when the other team's just not feeling it, doesn't really want to fight you, you're going to win the fight. And, you know, I thought the Bulls did a good job of leaning on that, because like they tried this in the last matchup and the Cavs handled it just fine.
Yeah, exactly.
So like, you know, I'm not really in the spirit of macro takeaways here. I think they've been good enough on the defensive boards this year that I'm not crazy worried. I know you've done a little digging on this front. But yeah, like, I mean, they did play very, very, very badly. I don't want to confuse my lack of like anger for like, you know, tacit, like, it's not a problem. No, they were awful.
Yeah.
And they should have won this game 12 times over.
And I think that's the interesting thing too, because when you look at this game, so first half was the worst. The first half, Chicago got 17 offensive rebounds.
Worth so many.
It's ridiculous. Like,
not even that many were the Andre Drummond just playing volleyball.
No.
Like, most of them were like individual offensive rebound, get another clean shot.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't a lot of the, because sometimes Drummond will have like a 19 rebound game and seven of them will be on one possession where you didn't even score.
That was not what happened last night. There were a few possessions where I think there were three or four, but I agree overall. But the frustrating thing is, despite all of that, the Cavs really had this game won. Like, despite how poorly they played on the glass,
different ways, bro.
Like, Mitchell hits that free throw, it's a wrap. Allen doesn't foul DeRozan, you have at least a better chance, you know. And then Donnie got a great look off of that, right? And I thought it was interesting too, because the Dallas game, JB had Mobley inbounding, and obviously that didn't work out well. He went back to Mobley inbounding as, you know, a tall guy that is a good passer. They ran the play well. Donnie got a clean look and it went off the front of the rim, right? Like, you're happy with that coming out of a timeout, trying to get a shot to win the game. I was very happy with that, but I did want to at least make note of that. But it's funny that you look at the first half, despite the 17 offensive rebounds, the Cavs did win the Mobley Allen minutes by 7 points. And then the second half, I thought the Cavs did a lot better job on the offensive glass. They still gave up seven, which isn't great, but against a top 10 offensive rebounding team that's playing a massive lineup, third and four, like, that would have been normal. If they gave up 14 offensive rebounds in this game, I would have been okay with that. But I just think
they just unfortunately swapped that with other mistakes, you know? Like,
yeah.
Like, I mean, DeRozan took 19 free throws.
Yeah,
and like a lot of those were like, yeah, like he does grifty stuff, but like there's grift where there's the kind of, you know, foul bait stuff where you're doing a lot of unnatural stuff to get to the line. Mm-hmm. DeRozan was just pump faking and guys were going flying, like just like the kind of dead leg, dead brain kind of decisions at the end of a stretch of 5 and 7, but still, I mean, there's still no excuse for some of them.
Yeah, and the Cavs have done a good job in the past with those type of players of staying on their feet, and you know, how much you want to attribute to, you know, discipline, how much you want to attribute to fatigue, the end result is the same. But like, there were multiple times where, yeah, your arms are straight up, but you don't have your footing, so you kind of like trail into him as he's shooting. That's exactly what happened to Jared Allen, right? He kind of lost his footing and went into DeRozan on that last shot. So even though I don't want to take macro takeaways, I do think it's important that we address macro concerns when it comes to this, because the two things I noticed in this game were, one, obviously the offensive rebounding, because how could you not notice that? that's going to bring up those concerns for Cavs fans. And especially, like, we have to acknowledge that this time of year, you're going to have new people, new Cleveland sports fans tuning into the Cavs or tuning in more seriously to the Cavs during this stretch run after the All-Star break, right? So I think it's important to address kind of the macro concerns there. And then the other one was late in the game, they stopped running offense. Like, it got a little too stagnant. They slowed down the clock. They were playing the possession game. Yes, again, schedule situation and whatnot. But those are the habits you have to break. You have to be able to execute and run your offense when you're not feeling well, when you're as exhausted as possible, right? And yeah, when you're not able to generate rim pressure because Donovan Mitchell isn't feeling well, that's going to make things harder. But I think that's also when you want to try to generate a little bit more off-ball movement. So Mitchell or Garland isn't attacking a set defense. They're attacking when they have advantage, when they're catching the ball off of movement. I think that's the type of situations where you want to be able to still run that even when you're most tired.
Hey everyone, it's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for up to half the cost. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Savings based on cost of Consumer Cellular single line 1, 5, and 10 gig data plans with unlimited talk and text compared to lowest cost single line postpaid unlimited talk, text, and data plans offered by T-Mobile and Verizon January 2024.
Are you tired of your scented cleaning products smelling and cleaning like meh? Then it's time for an upgrade with the power of Clorox Scentiva. With an uplifting scent that smells like coconut, Clorox Scentiva gives you powerful clean like Clorox, but a feeling like being transported to a tropical island retreat. Imagine putting your phone on Do Not Disturb, tuning out all the constant, just the feeling of warm sand in between your toes and a fruity drink in your hand. The ones with the little umbrella. Refresh your home to feel like an all-inclusive vacation by getting Clorox Scentiva. Also available in grapefruit and lavender scents at a nearby retail store.
Now I'd like to introduce you to Meaningful Beauty, the famed skincare brand created by iconic supermodel Cindy Crawford. It's her secret to absolutely gorgeous skin. Meaningful Beauty makes powerful and effective skincare simple, and it's loved by millions of women. It's formulated for all ages and all skin tones and types, and it's designed to work as a complete skincare system, leaving your skin feeling soft, smooth, and nourished. I recommend starting with Cindy's full regimen, which contains all five of her best-selling products, including the amazing youth-activating Melon Serum. This next generation serum has the power of melon leaf stem cell technology. It's melon leaf stem cells encapsulated for freshness and released onto the skin to support a visible reduction in the appearance of wrinkles. With thousands of glowing five-star reviews, why not give it a try? Subscribe today and you can get the amazing Meaningful Beauty System for just $49.95. That includes our introductory five-piece system, free gifts, free shipping, and a 60-day money-back guarantee. All of that available at MeaningfulBeauty.com.
Yeah, when they ran action late in the game, it did tend to yield good looks. You know, they got clean looks from three. Darius hit that corner three that, you know, was pretty much wide open off of movement, off of an action. Like, and, you know, I at least didn't hate the shot profile. They were at least taking threes, and good pull-up three-point shooters were taking those threes. But, like, I think ultimately you're right. Like, their process was not very good. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it just felt like a kind of a get me home game, you know, like, or, you know, let's just get it over with game. And, you know, like, sometimes you'll see that in the regular season, you'll see a guy just go for like a knockout haymaker three to be like, hey, if I make it, we're going to win. And if we lose, at least, or if I miss, it'll be over and we'll just get out of here. Mm-hmm. You know, it just kind of felt like a lot of those kind of possessions. You know, obviously Chicago just jumped down their throat to start the second OT, and
Overtime streak is dead, Carter.
Well, I'll tell you what, brother. Bally Sports, you gotta stop showing the graphic. they showed it every overtime, and I'm like, guys.
I felt like tweeting at John Michael, being like, "Hey, let's dial it down. Let's not do that."
Our obligation to journalism is extinguished when we're gonna be jinxing each other. But yeah, I mean, eventually you're gonna lose an overtime game. It stinks to lose one that you should have locked up
that you had locked
ways.
Up. Yeah.
Nine different ways, bro. You know, it's just, you know, Vooch fouls out. Like there's just 1,000 different spots where they should have, you know, they're playing a guy I've literally never heard of. Onurap Batim? He's a Turkish rookie. Never heard of him in my life.
Yep. Hit his first shots of his career, yeah, and hit the clutch free throws too. Shout out to him.
First free throws of his career.
Yeah.
This guy, we watch so much basketball. It's crazy that I've never heard of him, and he's ended up playing down the stretch. So, like, I'm not excusing the loss by any means because it's a bad loss. It's bad for all the reasons that, you know, we've already laid out. It's bad for tiebreaker purposes.
Yep.
It does make this game against the Pistons like, hey, guys, don't blow it, please.
Yeah.
Because all of a sudden, you know,
you'd have to win both against
Milwaukee.
Indiana.
Will be tied for the 2 seed at the end of the night tonight. They're up 18 going into the fourth against the Hornets. And you know, so it stinks to lose it, but you know, in the end, you know, I do want you to kind of explain this stat because, of course, you did homework, and I'm looking in the rundown. Can we talk about the rebounding numbers and how and whether the trend tonight, you know, which you know, again, people are gonna be like, I guess they don't got that dog in them.
Mm-hmm.
Is that true? Does that bear out? Did tough rebounding teams cook the Cavs this year?
So I want to get to that by first talking about our three-point shooting, because after the last podcast, I'm very glad that I got some vindication here, because people were concerned, hey, Garland and Mobley are back. We're not taking threes. Like
I was concerned. Three straight games.
Right. We were concerned three straight games, and I pointed out, you know, they were back for 10 games prior to the All-Star break, and they were taking 38 threes a game. I said, it's a matter of execution. We know how this team wants to play. They just have to go out there and be confident with the shots. Well, they took 94 threes in the last two games. Kind of vindicated my point. Sam Merrill didn't play in these games, and they took 94 threes and shot the hell out of the ball. It comes down to execution, and I think it's very similar when you look at the defensive rebounding this season. Funny enough, the Cavs were actually 7th in defensive rebound percentage coming into this game. That game knocked them down to 11th.
Oh, that sounds right.
That's a hell of a stat. And what I looked at was the top 10 teams in offensive rebound percentage and how the Cavs have done against them relative to their average for the season. And in the first three matchups against Chicago, the Bulls' offensive rebound percentage was 6.2% lower than their season average. They had done really,
that's a
really
big jump, by the way, gang.
That's a huge jump. Massive difference. And, you know, I, of course, being curious, what was different about the matchup? Was it Tristan Thompson being there? Like in the last game against Chicago that Tristan played, because he only played the first two, Tristan played 14 minutes. He had 4 points and 2 rebounds, and he was minus 14 in those minutes. Like they did not win that game because of Tristan's impact. It had been, you know, the collective buy-in that we have seen from the Cavs this season, whether it's the guys on the perimeter, which often your rebounding is going to start with your point of attack defense, not allowing that easy penetration that gets the bigs out of position trying to recover. But obviously after last night, Chicago's offensive rebound percentage against the Cavs for the season is now 1.6% above the average. And when I looked at the top 10 teams in offensive rebound percentage and how the Cavs did against them, there isn't a single team that rebounds more than 2% better than their average for the season. The Knicks, which the Cavs have only played them twice with Mitchell Robinson, Jared Allen didn't play in either of those games. So you would think, hey, they're going to kill us again, right? They got 40% offensive rebounds against the Cavs in the playoffs. Only Mobley's out there. It's going to be rough. Only 1.2% more than the average. The second best offensive rebounding team in the league is Utah. They rebounded 8.3% worse than their average. The Warriors had the most success, plus 2. Blazers, 0.5% less. Atlanta, minus 5.2% lower than their average. Denver with Nikola Jokic. Jared Allen worked his ass off in that matchup. Their offensive rebound rate was 7.3% below their season average. Orlando, big physical team at every single position, 1.4% below their season average. Philly, almost 3% below their season average.
Even in games the Cavs did not play well in, by the way.
Correct.
Three.
Correct. And in the game against Joel Embiid, because obviously he only played the one, it was 1.1% there below their average. Jared Allen, once again, played his ass off in that matchup. So similar to, similar to the three-point rate, it comes down to execution. We know that they can do this. We know that this is a flaw in the roster that they can address with the personnel that they have. But the important thing to take away from this game is just because those are the season average, they can still go out there and they can still get punked. If they don't perform and if they don't execute, this still can be a weakness. And that's my main takeaway here.
Yeah. And I'm sorry, you're blowing a tire. You were monologuing so well that your body gave out on you, man. It's like you're fifth and seven.
Once again.
It's okay, buddy. First off, thank you for doing the research. That's awesome. And like, I think it also speaks to a more specific anxiety, aka, because like, I've been pretty pleased with their defensive rebounding this year, but I have remained a little angsty about how they're going to hold up against the best teams.
Yep.
You know, like, sure, if you control the boards against, you know, the 28th best offensive rebounding team in the league, it's nice to do that, but does that really mean much for the playoffs? Probably not.
Yeah, so it's padding the stats.
The fact that they are either better or not significantly worse against all of these great offensive rebounding teams, that's really important. It shows meaningful growth. Ultimately, we're going to test to see under the playoff spotlight whether or not this is they're ready to kind of, you know, I guess atone. I can't think of a better verb, even though that feels pretty heavy.
Yeah, it does.
For last year, but like, we're gonna have to see that. And one thing I do want to say, because I did see some people criticizing Scheme last night, that saying that they were over helping and that's why they were giving up boards. I don't think so. I think they were just getting their butts kicked. Ayo Dosunmu pulled the chair on Jarrett. On an offensive board where Jarrett had perfect position, you know, like it was just they just were not winning the physical battles at any level, and they paid the piper for it, you know.
Yeah, and sometimes I think that's people just like wanting to absolve the team of accountability, and like they always default to, you know, coaching rotations, well, right? Like we would have
the opposite of what happened in the playoffs, where everyone wanted to blame the bigs, and we kind of felt like they were over helping a little bit. So it's funny. Like I just feel like you really got to watch the game, and you really have to fight against your inclinations based on what you're expecting, and really watch what's happening. Which like it's hard, and sometimes we're wrong. Sometimes our inclinations win. So I'm not saying that we're definitely right and that person's definitely wrong, but like, it is one of those things.
Yeah. And like I like to say, you know, it's sometimes I think fans treat whether it's coaches or players like an algebra equation. Like we're trying to collect data points to find out are they good or are they bad? When in reality, like, we're talking about people that can either, you know, they have good games, bad games, they have good plays, bad plays, they can get better, they can learn from it. And what's most important for me is that I'm seeing growth. I don't care about mistakes. I don't care about bad games, as long as the macro trends are all going in the right direction. But I can't fault someone if like how they experience fandom is, hey, I'm going to be a cautious. I'm going to be guarded. I'm not going to let myself get hurt. If when they see a game like this and they go, man, like, is it going to be the same thing? The data points say that, you know, they have improved there, but just because the season numbers have improved doesn't mean that this isn't something that can still happen to them if they don't go out and execute. And for me, that's exciting because like, obviously I like the way that I experience fandom because it's how I choose to experience fandom. But like, for me, that's the process. That's the journey. It's about a team learning to take games like this, take the lessons from the playoffs and improve upon it. And like the growth that they've shown this season, I think is really encouraging on the defensive glass. I think it goes to show that they do have the personnel. And even like, okay, is it a bunch of uncontested rebounds? Even after last night, the Cavs are 11th in the NBA in contested defensive rebound rate. Like, that's a really good sign. Like those are the kind of things that tell me, even if the Cavs lose a playoff series, offensive rebounding might be a factor, but it's not going to be a factor to the degree where it's the main story, right? Like, I don't want the Cavs to change their game plan to be, man, we can't get beat up on the glass. Let's just go massive. Let's muck it up. If you're going to like compete and you're keeping these teams within like 1 or 2% of their season averages, just go out there and outscore them. Execute on offense. You're going to get enough stops. This defense is good enough. Don't abandon your game plan to go play in the mud. Like, have confidence, and the guys out there are going to need to do their part to contribute on the defensive glass, because I don't think it's something this season where it's going to be the main story of the playoffs. I think ultimately it's going to come down to how they execute offensively and whether or not they're able to, over these last 24 games, develop the chemistry that they need to in order to be clicking at the level you need to in the playoffs.
Yeah, they're going to need to really work to develop that kind of consistency, just like the consistency we get from our video conferencing software. Support for this podcast and the following message come from Zoom. 500,000 businesses connect using Zoom, a single platform for phone, chat, workspaces, events, apps, and video. Zoom enables real-time collaboration for teams around the globe. Zoom, how the world connects.
Are you tired of your scented cleaning products smelling and cleaning like meh? Then it's time for an upgrade with the power of Clorox Scentiva. With an uplifting scent that smells like coconut, Clorox Scentiva gives you powerful clean like Clorox, but a feeling like being transported to a tropical island retreat. Imagine putting your phone on Do Not Disturb, tuning out all the constant, just the feeling of warm sand in between your toes and a fruity drink in your hand. The ones with the little umbrella. Refresh your home to feel like an all-inclusive vacation by getting Clorox Scentiva. Also available in grapefruit and lavender scents at a nearby retail store.
Now I'd like to introduce you to Meaningful Beauty, the famed skincare brand created by iconic supermodel Cindy Crawford. It's her secret to absolutely gorgeous skin. Meaningful Beauty makes powerful and effective skincare simple, and it's loved by millions of women. It's formulated for all ages and all skin tones and types, and it's designed to work as a complete skincare system, leaving your skin feeling soft, smooth, and nourished. I recommend starting with Cindy's full regimen, which contains all five of her best-selling products, including the amazing youth-activating Melon Serum. This next generation serum has the power of melon leaf stem cell technology. It's melon leaf stem cells encapsulated for freshness and released onto the skin to support a visible reduction in the appearance of wrinkles. With thousands of glowing five-star reviews, why not give it a try? Subscribe today and you can get the amazing Meaningful Beauty System for just $49.95. That includes our introductory five-piece system, free gifts, free shipping, and a 60-day money-back guarantee. All that available at MeaningfulBeauty.com.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
I'm really happy. I'm happy you did that, because when you started talking, I'm like, oh, he's kind of giving me a great segue here for a Zoom read. I'm like, I hope he doesn't go long-winded and change his point. Like, I really want to be able to go off of this. And you slammed it home yourself. I'm happy, Carter. You know, yeah, we're finding a rhythm.
We were running the floor in transition. You filled the corner, and it caused enough of a it opened up the lane for me to yam it.
You know, the chemistry is getting better podcast by podcast. It's a little less your turn, my turn. And I felt the same way about how Darius Garland has played these last couple games. I think he's looking more comfortable. We're not at the point where he's back by any stretch of the imagination. Like, I love seeing him take, you know, 14 threes, 7 of 14 against the Bulls. Took a lot of threes against Washington. I think those are steps in the right direction. But I feel like we're getting back to where I'm a little more accustomed to him. Like, where even when he's not playing well, the impact is at least there. I pulled this up before the podcast today, but from an on-off standpoint since the All-Star break, the Cavs' net rating is 44 points better when Darius is on the court compared to off. There is not another Cavs player in double digits. And I don't think he's played particularly well, but you got to go and you look at it and, okay, he's shooting 41% from three over that sample. That's helpful. His assist to turnover ratio is at three. That's very good. That's back. We're getting back to that point where, you know, even when he's not playing as well, he's having an impact on the game. And I feel like that's the first step towards, hey, now he's going to be himself. And then what we hope is another step forward.
Yeah, it's just an interesting thing. I thought he played a really good game last night, you know, five assists to one turnover. The 14 three-point attempts was just really exciting. I thought he was taking all the right ones. Didn't take a ton of ridiculous pull-ups out of rhythm. A lot of them were in the rhythm of the game.
They ran elevators for him, Carter.
Yeah, it was nice. It was That's very beautiful. Nice. And like, I just think, again, if the starting lineup's going to work the way we want it to, those three guys got to take a ton of threes. And they did that against Chicago, and they did that to a slightly lesser extent against Dallas. He only got five up, but he only took 10 shots. So 50% of his shots were threes at the least.
Yeah.
So I was very, very encouraged by that. And what I think it does, well, it does a couple things. While he is kind of getting himself back to like the Darius we know and love, it just kind of evens things out. It makes his impact flatter, or it raises the floor of his impact, because if teams are scrambling out to stop him from shooting from three, it kind of just inherently is the tide that raises all boats, allows his playmaking, which feels pretty much back to normal, to thrive while he gets his inside the arc scoring game figured out. And you know, I guess if I'm watching Darius and he needs to be figuring out one part of his game, I'd rather him be kind of working through his inside the arc scoring in his finishing, but the 3-point volume and accuracy is really good, rather than the inverse. Because I think one kind of raises more boats than the other. It does feel like, I don't know if it's a conditioning and burst thing, the drives are not looking great right now. He's getting his shot packed in a way that shows you the angles don't feel very good for him right now. He's not generating crazy clean looks. You know, he'll drive into traffic and, you know, have the kind of no chancers. You know, he had a few of those in the Bulls game. I mean, the fact that he goes 7 of 14 from three and only scores one more point than shots taken kind of shows you where his 2-point game is at right now inside the arc. And he
was chucking definitely in overtime. Like he did put a dent in his efficiency in those two overtimes for sure.
Yeah, for sure. So like I don't know exactly, you know, kind of you are still kind of waiting for everything to click in, but like stylistically, I felt like that's the Darius I want to see. The results I still believe need to follow. You know, 23 on 22 is not, you know, a night to throw a party about, but I still think, and in general, I thought that the Cavs' offensive process was really good in this game. I just think, you know, their execution was a little lacking in some key spots.
Yeah, and it's funny because our buddy, friend of the podcast, Esfandiar Berahini, he tweeted out the highest field goal percentage for high volume drivers over the last 6 weeks. Prior to these last,
was right up there.
He was ninth. He was ninth in percentage, and I would have to assume that has gone down these last couple games, because I've noticed, and something we touched on the last podcast about how he's seeming a little contact averse at this point, he is taking off from further from the basket than I can recall, really, when it comes to these drives. Like, he's taking off basically in floater range and trying to put it up off the glass, and that just makes the timing really easy for the shot blocker, where I thought earlier in the year he was almost getting too deep and really welcoming the contact. And I think there's going to be a give and take of refining that balance and whatnot, but I definitely think that he's been playing better. And I think the thing I've noticed these last couple games is it is getting better off ball. Like, they're running more design sets to kind of get him going and find a rhythm off ball. But there's also just been more relocation, right? Like, just kind of identifying, all right, the play's going here. Let's get into a passing lane. Like, let's kind of get that smart positioning back. I think it's taking steps in the right direction, because the Darius that we had the last 2 years, where he's been putting up all-star caliber numbers, I think he's been a good off-ball player, but not a great off-ball player. And I think the potential is still there for him to become great off-ball. And I think that's going to be really important when it comes to playing with Donovan Mitchell and getting that pairing to work to its maximum capacity. Because one of the plays that jumped out to me in the Dallas game was Karis bringing it up. The Cavs had a horn set with Mobley and George Niang, and it kind of flowed into a double drag where Niang got the ball, handed it off to Garland. Garland got the ball on the perimeter with momentum, attacked, had the advantage, destabilized defense, and lobbed it to Mobley for the jam. And that's the kind of stuff I really want to see. I love seeing him not creating just against the set defense where he's good, but coming in off the ball and immediately upon receiving it, attacking the basket and attacking the defense, because that's going to make a defender second guess and allow him to take those pull-ups that he's now starting to take at a higher rate. It's just a more confident approach. And I think weaponizing both him and Donovan Mitchell, where both of them can play off ball like that when the other one has the ball, or when Karis has the ball, or whoever, I think that is going to lead to sustainable offense in the playoffs. So I just feel like, even though the results weren't necessarily there against Chicago, I thought their assertiveness, how decisive they were with what they were running offensively, was a big step in the right direction and something that was encouraging. It sucked that at the end of the game, they got away from that. And again, that goes back to what we've talked about of breaking those bad habits. When you're tired, when things aren't going well, when your shot's not falling, are you going to stick to the offensive design? And at the end of the day, it's on Donovan Mitchell and Darius Garland more than anybody else on that court to be those floor generals and to make sure you're being vocal and having those sets being run.
Yeah, I mean, well said. I do think they lost their way a little bit on that end of the floor. And, you know, the one thing I will say about when they close with Darius, Donovan, and Karis, sometimes, not always, sometimes it becomes the your turn, my turn, my turn, your turn show.
Oh, yeah.
I think that particular lineup construction sometimes rubs me the wrong way in crunch time, because all three of those guys are such capable individual creators that I think you've mentioned you felt like Darius has had a bit of an up and down off ball year. Karis, I think, is been improving as an off-ball player, but he's not exactly like the guy you're running a ton of sets for off-ball. He's more of like the instinctive cutter, you know, after an advantage has already been gained. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes that lineup can get a little gunky. When the guys are on, it feels really good. So I don't know what the lineup data says. So, because, like, you know, talent
from a net rating standpoint, it was our best lineup last year, but eye test never felt as good. Like, I thought the results were ahead of the process when it came to how they play together.
Yep. Karis had, you know, a career high 15 assists last night. So I'm not exactly suggesting he had a bad game or anything.
Yeah. It's just three straight good games from him. Like, honestly, like, if we're helpful, going strictly merit based off of who should have been closing by how they played in that Bulls game, Karis probably should have been on instead of Donovan and had Isaac out there or someone else. But, you know, the thing about
I would have liked to see more Isaac down the stretch. to be honest. I thought he was playing with the toughness that you'd want to see. But by the way, on the note of kind of getting wrecked on the boards, Isaac can't play 24 minutes and have zero rebounds. Like, you know, like the, that, like, you know,
that's as glaring as Allen's numbers.
Yeah. Zero is bad.
Yep. And again, that's in a game that I really love some of what Isaac was doing. Like how quick trigger the threes were, was getting me excited. Like he's shooting in transition. Like I feel like we are in the midst of an Isaac leap, but even within that, right? Like there's those kind of things that can make a big difference, because you're seeing now that Okoro is a confident 3-point shooter that's getting it up at a good rate. Shout out to our boy Ice. He's up over 40% from three. He's over 50% from the floor. And he just turned 23 years old, and he's a lockdown defender. Did you see the tweet that I had? I think it was in the Dallas game. Do you know what Isaac is shooting from mid-range this season?
100%.
He is 2 of 2. He's taken 2 shots from the mid-range. Like, if he was doing this in Boston, where he's finishing in the paint at a high rate, he's shooting 40% from three, and he's one of the best perimeter defenders in the league, they'd be throwing parades. Like, there would be a feature on the Ringer every single week about this guy. He is an analytics darling, and I'm sick of him being buried, Carter.
I mean, again, I think he got buried in this game. I would have liked to see him close. I thought, I thought the three, you know, and just looking through the game log for him, really exciting. Since Philly, he's gotten up 4-8, 4-3, 4-4, 5 3-point attempts. Like, that is the kind of volume he's always needed to do. It hasn't hurt that a lot of them are going in. Mm-hmm. But like, yeah, I mean, that's what you want. You want him, and when he is shooting at that volume, all the other stuff he does offensively just feels so much better. The bully ball takes are really reliable these days. You know, remember that game against Phoenix's rookie year when he had like 28 or something like that?
Yeah.
And it was a lot of just bullying guards at the point, you know, at the hoop to get up a clean look. Mm-hmm. Like, feels like when we saw that game, we're like, oh, that might be like a legitimate thing he can rely on. Kind of feels like he's there, you know. If you stash a small, you know, a small weaker guy on him,
he's going to reliably punish them. Like, he's, and not like an offensive foul, like pushing off with his arm or anything like that. Like, there's been many times where he's, you know, the initial defender comes out and he blows by them because now they're respecting the jumper, and all of a sudden that smaller help defender comes, and it's just, he usually, what he'll do is he'll go to the middle of the key and then kind of pivot and, you know, almost like a post move, a quick post move to make sure I'm not getting the offensive foul, but I've established deep post position. And now I'm going to pivot and put my butt into you and kind of generate that space to put it high off the glass. It's so smart because I don't think he's been caught with an offensive like charge on those pretty much. Like, if it's happened, it's only happened under 5 times this year.
Normally like the full speed takes.
Yeah, but like he gets that deep position, he pivots, he puts it high off the glass, bump, and he finishes well. Like, I'm really, really impressed by his control in those situations and just how aggressive he is in recognizing when a guy on him is just too small.
Yeah, so, you know, and that kind of stuff just matters, you know. Not
big time.
You can't provide safe haven in the postseason. Like, I think, like, for example, like, let's say the Cavs hold on to 2 and the Atlanta Hawks somehow make it into that 7 spot. You know, it's unlikely, but like, I don't think you can put Trae Young on Isaac over the course of, you know, heavy minutes. I think he's at the point now where he's going to be able to bully that, and you're going to have to send help. And the Cavs are just so, like, it just gets real hard when you have to send 2 on the ball on Isaac Okoro guarding this team. So I've been really, really impressed with him. I continue to feel like I'm pretty ready to just put it on the record. I think he should be 6th in the team in minutes. I think he should be our leading minutes guy off the bench right now. I've just really, really been impressed. Every time he's out there, he adds something different. The floor is getting higher and higher and higher, and that really matters to me.
I have a hard time going that far just because of how good Karis has been, but like,
I understand that, but
I think they should be neck and neck. Like, I think both of them should be getting like 20, 26 for sure. And I do have to say, like, another thing we mentioned on the last podcast was, God, it's really hard to get these guys enough minutes. We, like, both
JB seems to agree.
Yeah, we wanted to see a 9-man rotation, and, you know, I think there's still some angst over Sam Merrill not being part of the permanent rotation. But I get it. Like, it's, you know, we can't sit here. It'd be hypocritical for us to sit here and say, well, we wanted a 9-man rotation and we got it, but, like, it's not the guy that we, like, that we want. Like, these are the 9 that I would expect, because where we are deepest is at the guard position. And to put Sam Merrill on the court, it means taking one of Garland, Mitchell, Okoro, or LeVert off of the court. And, like, there's just more depth at the 4 position. There's still going to be matchups where Sam can play, but I do think it's noteworthy that when you look at the stretch, basically since the Clippers game, when Mobley and Garland came back, there's only 2 players on the roster that have a negative net rating on the court. George Niang is at negative 0.5, and Sam Merrill is at negative 12.4 in his minutes. And like, that's not all on him. Some of that's lineups, you know, it's still a small sample and whatnot. Yeah, but
it's such a small sample. He's playing 8-10 minutes a game.
Yeah, but even in the 30 minutes he played since the All-Star break, he's taken 8 shots in those 30 minutes, right? Like, it's, I understand, given the needs of this team, we have more depth when it comes to the guards and the guys that are playing at point guard and shooting guard than we do in the front court. So there's going to be that availability. And what I really liked was JB said prior to the Chicago game that the 9th man who plays the most out of the 8th and 9th man is going to be determined by the matchup and how well they're playing. And he stuck to his word in this game, because Dean Wade, as I said, he had his best shift since he had the illness. I thought his defense was on point. I thought he looked more confident offensively. And he got rewarded. He got to play the second half while George Niang was benched for the second half. And I think as long as it's going to be merit-based, there's going to be nights like Washington where George Niang's plus 22 and, you know, his veteran leadership is going to be valuable and he's hitting threes. And there's going to be other matchups where Dean's going to be more helpful, or maybe even Sam if nothing's clicking and you need three-point shooting. But on a night where you took 54 three-pointers and you shot 41%, that wasn't what we needed. We needed rebounding, we needed stops, and we needed size. And none of that was going to be brought by Sam.
Are you tired of your scented cleaning products smelling and cleaning like meh? Then it's time for an upgrade with the power of Clorox Scentiva. With an uplifting scent that smells like coconut, Clorox Scentiva gives you powerful clean like Clorox, but a feeling like being transported to a tropical island retreat. Imagine putting your phone on Do Not Disturb, tuning out all the constant, just the feeling of warm sand in between your toes and a fruity drink in your hand. The ones with the little umbrella. Refresh your home to feel like an all-inclusive vacation by getting Clorox Scentiva. Also available in grapefruit and lavender scents at a nearby retail store.
Now I'd like to introduce you to Meaningful Beauty, the famed skincare brand created by iconic supermodel Cindy Crawford. It's her secret to absolutely gorgeous skin. Meaningful Beauty makes powerful and effective skincare simple, and it's loved by millions of women. It's formulated for all ages and all skin tones and types, and it's designed to work as a complete skincare system, leaving your skin feeling soft, smooth, and nourished. I recommend starting with Cindy's full regimen, which contains all 5 of her best-selling products, including the amazing Youth Activating Melon Serum. This next generation serum has the power of melon leaf stem cell technology. It's melon leaf stem cells encapsulated for freshness and released onto the skin to support a visible reduction in the appearance of wrinkles. With thousands of glowing 5-star reviews, why not give it a try? Subscribe today and you can get the amazing Meaningful Beauty system for just $49.95. That includes our introductory 5-piece system, free gifts, free shipping, and a 60-day money-back guarantee. All that available at meaningfulbeauty.com.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snag a Job's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Yeah, I think the most noteworthy rotational thing was you know, JB kind of putting his money where his mouth is and saying like, hey, George, you're just not giving it for us tonight, and we're going to go look somewhere else in the second half, even if that meant going small, because Wade only played 14 minutes. It's not like he played, you know, 20, 25, and I actually probably would have tried to give him a little bit more. You know, and this is the thing that's always tough is someday I would like to actually ask a coach about the, you know, because our Discord was grumping about no subs in either of the overtime when the guys looked a little dead. Yeah. And I was like, well, no coach ever subs in overtime, it seems. Like, no one ever is just giving guys a blow in OT.
There were some because they went one big for most of it, because I think what JB was thinking, particularly prior to Vucevic fouling out, was, hey, if I'm playing both bigs, they're going to have Drummond and Vucevic out there, and we're struggling with that tonight. So I'm going to go four out. I'm going to have, you know, whether it was Karis, whether it was whomever, and stagger Mobley and Allen so that they're a little more fresh rebounding at the center position. I thought that was a smart position, but you're right. In general, coaches will go with their starters in overtime, no matter how many overtimes
it goes. Whatever lineup they're going to play. Whatever
lineup it is, like, that's an NBA trend that I've never really agreed with, but it's also something that every single coach does.
Yeah, it's like relatively universal. So I'm definitely curious. I would love to ask a coach if I ever got a chance to, like, hey, do you 10 straight minutes when they've already played a ton? Like, are you, like, when you get into a double OT, I'm surprised they never give like one or two guys a blow, but they don't. So, ultimately, like, the game was tight. So, you know, when a game is tight down the stretch like that, you end up seeing like minutes, you know, kind of distributed this way, where you got Darius and Donnie playing 44 minutes apiece and Dean only playing 14 and Evan playing 42. Cause like, just, and you know, Karis even was up to 39, which is, that's a lot of minutes.
That kind of shows like that their minutes had been managed. Like, I think none of the starters played more than 14 minutes in the first half, right? Like, even though Dean only played 4 minutes in the first half, a lot of the bench guys had played double-digit minutes, and the minutes were being managed. But when you get to 44 after 10 minutes of overtime, your 34 minutes that you were planning on prior to, you know, Donnie missing the free throw and Allen fouling DeRozan, if the starters were just at 34 minutes, that would have felt a whole lot better. But continue. I'm sorry for cutting you off.
It's okay. Ultimately, what I think, if you're concerned about like the way the rotations are playing out right now, I think we're watching the coaching staff try to figure it out in real time, exactly what the right thing is. You know, we both wanted a 10-man rotation, and once we got, and the coaches seemed to agree, once we got there, we felt a little icky about it. Just wasn't, you know, we couldn't get the lineups we wanted to see on the floor, aka, you know, like, for example, we talked about that, the Okoro, Wade, Struce, Mitchell, Allen lineup. We wanted to see that, and it's really hard to do that with a 10-man rotation. JB has kind of said, you know, in media availability, like, hey, we're looking at lineup data. And, you know, but one thing you kind of have to do as a coach that I think us fans are maybe never going to understand is you have to give lineups run. You have to give things chances, you know. The Karis as a starter experiment was a thing that the Cavs needed to give. You know, if you weren't a fan of that lineup, then two games in, you were ready to move on, but coaching staff needed to give it 10 or whatever many games it was last year.
And honestly,
I think that we're going to see that, but like, you have enough time to figure that out. Like, and maybe while you're figuring it out, you might lose a game or two. And I know everyone's angsting about the standings race, which fair, you know, it'd be better to have the 2 seed than the 3 seed, but like, you do have enough time to land on lineups that you like or don't like, and then it's just going to be a matter of, trusting what you have going into the postseason.
Yeah, and part of the reason why I bring up, you know, like Merrill's on coordinate rating and stuff like that is like the reason I bring up lineup data so often is because JB has mentioned that, hey, this is something that we look at, right? Like there's statistical backing to what we're trying. And, you know, last year, the Karasat small forward lineup really did work in its minutes. But despite that, you know, JB talking to Karas, hey, I feel more comfortable coming in off the bench. Maybe this is just something we close with, right? Like it's not just about the results. It's about getting the best out of every player individually. And I think Karas has continued to grow in his time with the Cavs. One of the things like I haven't loved at times is Niang along with Garland and Mobley, like in that unit. But then you look at the lineup data prior to Garland and Mobley getting hurt, those three had a plus 22 net rating together. So when you're trying to reintegrate Darius Garland and Evan Mobley into the lineup and get them comfortable, going with the safety blanket player that it worked really well with in the past, I understand that logic. So I think you bring up a good point, but that's why I always like to bring it up whenever I can.
Yeah, it's this is just crazy hard. You know, again, I always talk about the lessons you want to learn, and the takeaways you want to have, and you know, you have so many factors at play, and you know, I have opinions on kind of where I want to see. I definitely want to see more Wade. I want to see more Okoro. Even if that means other guys have to kind of hold L's, but like ultimately it's just not so simple, you know, when you're evaluating the results, because you, and what you're going to do, you have to account for how individuals are performing. Like maybe the lineup data sucked in that game because this player just wasn't locked in, you know. Anyone who was playing against, playing with, you know, a guy with Jarrett last night, their lineups probably didn't look that good because Jarrett had a really rough game. So you have to consider that. You have to consider what you're communicating to your team. You can't just pull guys around willy-nilly. They need to have a reasonable expectation of what's going to happen on a night-to-night basis. You have politics. You have, like, you know, guys with status, they're like, hey, I've been around, like don't just pull me out, like give me like, a minute to work through this.
George Niang's a great example of that, right? Like he's a guy with among the most playoff experience out of anyone on this roster, right? Like, you know, doing things effectively in the regular season doesn't always translate to the playoffs. I think Cavs fans can have some understanding of that. Having a veteran that brings toughness, that's beloved in the locker room, that's, you know, recruited by Donovan Mitchell, like, you know, that's, comes with an expectation, right? Like that he's going to contribute. And frankly, like I think Niang's been playing a little bit better recently. And you want to continue to give him those opportunities. So the reason why I really wanted the 9-man rotation is because like, I think you can go 10 when you have a bunch of bench guys that can contribute, but it's not as reliable. You're not too sure what you're getting and whatnot. When you have two subs that deserve almost near starters minutes, like you do with Caris LeVert and Isaac Okoro, it's really hard to get to 10. And I think you can get to that lineup where it's Donnie, Okoro, Wade, Struce, and Allen. You can get to that if you're going 9, because then you can have certain bridge guys in that lineup, whether it's Okoro going over to the Garland Mobley pairing or whatnot. If you're going 10, you just run out of minutes. And that means, all right, you basically have to do a hockey shift where you're playing Garland out there with like Merrill, LeVert, Niang, and Mobley. And that just doesn't work as a unit. So I think shortening the rotation, as much as it hurts and as much as like Sam deserves time, like there's going to be opportunities. Like when guys aren't
tomorrow.
You might have one tomorrow where either he or Craig is playing. So there are going to be those chances, but I think it's not straightforward, and these things do take time. And honestly, I when it came to the offensive perspective, I came away more encouraged from the Chicago game with the process there than, as you said, the Dallas game or any games before. Like I feel like they are starting to click again. I'm starting to recognize who this team is offensively a little bit more.
Absolutely, buddy.
All right.
Weird post-deadline run here. They're 3-3, I believe, in those games. It's tough because you kind of felt like they should be 4-2 or 5-1 in that stretch. You know, a lot of winnable games that just kind of slipped through for one reason or another. Mm-hmm. So, like, I get it. But ultimately, I'm seeing things trend the way I want to see them trend. And that's encouraging.
It definitely is. And honestly, Carter, for those watching on the YouTube, I've been hacking up a lung for the last half hour.
No kidding, bro.
Hitting mute. I'm struggling. Like I said, I don't know how I still am sick. I should be over this by now. I haven't been outside since the 10th, man. Like I don't know
how you're getting sick.
I'm blown away by this. It is absolutely mystifying. It is lonely at Castle Rowan right now. Trish is off on a trip, work trip, which means I had to even give up the dog because I can't take care of the dog. I can't take care of anyone. I can't take care of myself. So of course I'm going to sit here and do a bunch of Cavs research. Like that, it is what it is. We will be back on Monday. Not going live after the Knicks game, but we will be back with Andrew Claudio from Knicks Film School. Really excited to have him back on the podcast. We will once again be diving into all these macro topics. So hopefully the Cavs, get it done against Detroit. Important game for tiebreaker standpoints. And then obviously that showcase against the Knicks. We're going to keep our fingers crossed that Donnie plays in these games. But if not, we still have more than enough to go out there and win. So big thanks to everyone that tuned in live on YouTube. Make sure you like and subscribe. Click notification bell so you know when we're going live. If you're listening via podcast and want to support us, leave us a rating. Leave us a review. Subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, and help cook those books. If you want to be part of Chasedown's exclusive Discord chat, send a screenshot of the review to chasedownpod@gmail.com. However you choose to support us, we really do appreciate it. Make sure you guys are staying safe out there. Until next time, go Cavs.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high-rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
Picasso knows your vacation home is your best home. It's the place that brings family and friends together. It's where you're the best version of yourself. Picasso makes it easy to co-own a luxury vacation home in amazing locations. Listings start at $200K for 1/8 ownership. Picasso does all the work for you. Luxury furnishings, maintenance, billing, scheduling, and more. And you can resell on Picasso's marketplace anytime, historically for a 10% gain. Visit Picasso to see thousands of listings. That's PACASO.com.